The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at cooperadio.org.
Thank you to everyone who donated to our fall member drive. We know it's hard times for many people during the pandemic, but we're very proud to say that the significant fundraising goals have been met. You can still donate at cooperadio.org and make sure you mention that you listen to The Pulse on CFRO. We continue our week of special coverage of the Heart of the City Festival. It's the 17th annual event that celebrates the Downtown Eastside arts and culture community. And for our third interview this week on events, we're going to talk to the artist in residence. Kari Wendell McClellan has been nominated for a Juno for his work with the soul trio Sojourners, and his Freedom Singer project has told the tales of people who escaped slavery to Canada, including his great-great-great-grandmother. We're going to talk to him about his workshop Thursday, Survival Tactics for Artists in the Age of COVID, and play some music from his Freedom Singers project. You can register for his workshop. There's 25 spaces available in the online Zoom interactive session Thursday, November 5th from 3 to 4:30 p.m. Go to heartofthecityfestival.com for more information on that and all of the over 100 arts events happening this week. Here's Kari Wendell McClellan. Well, it's really wonderful to have you with us, Kari, here on Vancouver Co-op Radio.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
So before we get into the topic of your Heart of the City workshop, can you kind of explain what it means to be an artist in residence for a festival?
Yeah, I think that's a loose term that basically says a particular artist is given a bit of spotlight and some sort of curatorial or sort of producer creative capacities that are a little bit different than just your average performer or artist related to any particular festival.
It's kind of a neat honor as well to kind of showcase your work and kind of guide the overall tone in some ways.
Yeah, I mean, I find the Heart of the City Festival to be one of the really great examples of community arts practice, and so to be chosen by them to work in this way is a real honor, absolutely.
Tell me a little bit about what Heart of the City Festival means to you.
Heart of the City Festival means to me I think it's a lot about sharing the voices of community members that are often unheard. I think it's also highlighting the capacities and the brilliance of, you know, many people who may not get a spotlight in the mainstream. And, you know, when I say that, I'm thinking about, you know, Chinese community members, Indigenous community members, specifically folks in the Downtown Eastside, people who are having housing precarity or people who use drugs or, you know, poor folks, that there's a way in which they meaningfully tap into the creative capacities of just kind of average folks from the neighborhood. And it makes the story of the community a richer one. And I feel like they are the holders of many, many stories that would otherwise be lost, whether that's the history of the Black community in Strathcona and the Downtown Eastside, or various other community members and different stories that are held.
One thing I love about the festival is always discovering that people I've talked to before who are activists or local residents or, you know, in organizations and their own art practices, however they define art. And you often, it doesn't allow anyone to be pigeonholed because people's art practice is so expensive.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they just do a great job of helping to facilitate many, many diverse stories being shared. Again, you know, an honor and inspired place to work.
Now, your workshop this year is looking at survival. And I think during COVID-19, you know, obviously there's been so much attention on the life and death needs of community members, whether during the overdose crisis or the pandemic. We don't talk about artists a lot, and I think it's time to have that conversation. I'm glad you are.
Yeah, well, I just think there's lots of different ways to think about what it means to be an artist and who is an artist. And, you know, for some folks, some of the, you know, ways that we've been habituated to make a living through the arts has really been greatly curtailed or reduced, you know, playing live venues or, you know, using, you know, walk-by traffic or, you know, a lot of the gathering spaces that people share art is no longer available to them in the same way. But I think I'm also interested in, you know, what it means to be an artist in a way that isn't always necessarily connected to commerce as well. And that art itself can be a lifeline for us.
I was just reading an interview with singer Phoebe Bridgers, and she kind of talked about the heartbreak of releasing an album when she couldn't tour and kind of feel the love from the people that are getting something transformative from the music. It's not just about commerce, as you said. It's about music is meant to be played. It's a live experience.
Yeah, I mean, definitely that's true. And I think, again, there's ways that we're habituated around how we do that and that, you know, are really like, really fill us up and are can be coping mechanisms. I think, you know, there's a way in which I've been called to be a little bit more internal, and not just in terms of turning towards myself, but also towards those who are really closest to me geographically. And that includes the people in my own household. And so even though I may not be able to go to Halifax or Winnipeg or, you know, some other country, I still have the opportunity to be creative and to share with, you know, people that are a little bit closer, you know, my close friends and family. And so that is one way that is still nourishing, even if it can't be for, you know, the masses.
I presume that when you got your start as an artist or interest in it as a kid, perhaps that the host at home was the place that you were sharing it at first, I'm guessing.
Yeah. And I think, you know, even more than that, it's like, you got to love what you do, yourself, I think, before you can consider it, reasonable to want to share it with other people. Like there has to be something about it that you yourself dig on. You got to think it's awesome to be doing the thing, or at least that's the kind of way I want to be with my creativity.
Some people talk about it as like you have no choice, almost that it's something that you have to create regardless of the outcome or the audience.
Yeah, I mean, I want to be compelled, for sure.
You're originally from Michigan, is that right?
Yeah, I'm originally from Detroit.
You must really be holding your breath with this election and all the uncertain results we're sure are going to follow it.
Definitely. I think I'm not alone. There are millions and millions of folks who are American or have relatives who are, or just know that the impacts of what that country does and how it moves will, you know, affect people around the world. So I think there's lots of people who are waiting for the results with a lot of anticipation.
What is your hope for your home country and kind of its impacts on us here in Canada?
I just love for there to be less sense of impending doom. that there might be a sense of possibility and hope for some growth, some connectedness for communities to come together in new and powerful ways. And maybe that's actually happening as a result of what is occurring too. You know, these things are often more complex than they are on the face. Sometimes the threat of great peril brings people together in significant and powerful ways. And yeah, I definitely hope for the future of the country that there will be a sort of a connection to the ethics and the moral place, the soul of the country, and how that might lead the country in a direction that is more reflective of a just and equitable and loving and kind society.
I wanted to ask you, since we're talking about cross-border impacts, you know, in Canada, we have so many connections to the slave trade, both having had slavery in parts of Canada after it was banned elsewhere, but also in terms of a destination for people who escaped from it and were brought up here to find freedom. And I wanted, could you talk about your Freedom Singer project and what, how that kind of relates to this journey?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Freedom Singer project was really about me trying to connect to the songs that my great-great-great-grandmother Kizzy would have sung as she was escaping from slavery in the United States and going into Canada. And that was the sort of initial impetus to find those songs and to find out more about her. And then I think what I also had happen was that I really ended up complicating the narrative that are associated with both sides of the border. And, you know, that includes, you know, the unfortunate and devastating history of slavery inside of Canada, both the slavery of Africans and the enslavement of Indigenous people. So I think that I started out with a particular notion about what the project was going to be, and then as usually happens when you actually put the rubber to the road and start doing the work, things become more complex and hopefully richer in a lot of ways.
It's an incredible project and amazing to hear about your, I hope they get this right, great-great-great-grandmother. I mean, what an incredible story that you can connect to. And it brings slavery so much into the present. That's only, you know, four generations ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the reception that she received in Canada in some ways was not, you know, the sort of benevolent and welcoming sort. She ended up losing her legs because of the cold. And so, you know, proper housing is something that, you know, comes up and is really super relevant to our current Vancouver climate. In regard to, you know, the housing camp or the homelessness camp and Camp KT and Strathcona Park.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, these issues of who has and who doesn't have and who deserves a place at the table and is, you know, we think healthcare is a human right. Is housing also, shouldn't housing also be a human right, especially considering like you have no health if you don't have housing really. So, yeah, it's, you know, the themes that came forward in Freedom Singer definitely feel relevant to today, whether it's the, you know, the movement for Black lives, or if it's, you know, just looking at our own inhumanity to one another. And I think that, you know, the even some of the notions that we have around the nation state, Canada and the U.S., who's good, who's bad, how that relates to Indigenous rights and sovereignty. You know, it's a complex, when you start looking at the histories of a nation, things are complex.
You mentioned the movement for Black Lives and Black Lives Matter protests drew a huge amount of people here in Vancouver. I'm wondering if, has there anything in your mind as an artist come about from that movement, that uprising, that's kind of inspired or changed the way art is done in the Black community?
I mean, I can't speak for the community. I can speak for my own arts practice in the sense that, I mean, I think that in general, artists reflect the times that they're in. And so I think, yeah, there's definitely probably lots of Black artists who are thinking about or choosing to or already were, you know, speaking to the issues at hand. And specifically to me, I definitely have noticed, you know, that I'm choosing to write and connect with some of those issues. But it's, you know, Freedom Singer was really started, you know, 4 years ago as a seed of an idea. And so in some ways, these themes are not new to me, and they're not like totally like something that's topical and of this moment. It's, you know, it's these are ideas that I've held for a long time, whether it's my work individually or my work with the Sojourners, you know, the movement for the liberation of Black people from, you know, substandard sort of a life in our world and in a lot of Western societies is, yeah, something that I've been concerned with for a long time.
Mm. Before we close, Kari, I wondered if there is a song that you might allow us to play on our show, and if you could tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so there's a song called Song of the Agitators from the Freedom Singer album.
That's the first track.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that's really powerful about that song is, one, that it's a song that comes from a periodical written in the 1850s when slavery was still legal in the U.S. but had been ended in Canada by that point. And so you had a lot of Black people moving to Canada from the United States, and they started a periodical called The Voice of the Fugitive. And how even that the title of that periodical says something about, like, sometimes what's legal isn't what's right, isn't what's moral. And so these people just deciding that they were going to liberate themselves made them fugitives from the law. And so I think that's telling. But I found the lyrics in this periodical, and then adapted some of the lyrics to our current period of time, looking at indigenous treaty rights, looking at, you know, young Black people being slain, looking at, you know, the youth and their cries for change. What, you know, you can look at that through the environmental lens, women not being paid equally to men, that, you know, even though these lyrics are old and the cry is to, you know, we won't cease to agitate until these changes come about. And so I think even though this message is coming from the 1850s and being transmitted to our current moment, the relevance is still very, very clear.
That's really beautiful. Thank you so much for your time, Kari, and I wish you the best with your workshop on Thursday.
Thank you so much, and I wish you the very best as well.
Take care. Best of health, and let's follow this U.S. election results and hope for the best.
Yeah, absolutely. Take good care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Cease to agitate, we will, when the slave whip sound is still. When no more old guiltless limb, fetters cut to surly grim. No more hounds thirst for blood, scouring the thorny Georgian woods. When no more a mother's pleading prayer quivers on the southern air. On that day, we will be here we are today, still pushing for equal pay. And these treaty rights don't hold, they're shining like the Judas gold. And the stain of blood remains, a mother's only son slain. Our kids crying out for more, continually being ignored. On that day, we will be family, equal, born and free. Dawn will come, night will cease, we'll rejoice mightily. For that day we'll work and wait, that's when we'll cease to agitate.
And that was Song of the Agitators off Kari Wendell McClelland's project Freedom Singer. McClelland is the Heart of the City Festival artist in residence. He's a musician originally from Detroit and gaining acclaim on the Canadian music scene, crossing genres and generations, spanning everything from rhythms and folklore of early African Americans to hip-hop, jazz, theater, history, and soul. He's been nominated for a Juno Award for his work with the gospel trio Sojourners and is the creator of Freedom Singers, a theatrical musical documentary project. He's giving a workshop for Heart of the City Festival on Thursday, November the 5th at 3 p.m. It's online and virtual. Registration is required and there's limited spaces, called Survival Tactics for Artists in the Age of COVID. Find out more about that and the festival at HeartOfTheCityFestival.com.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.